Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Thanks for joining me here on the D Word Podcast. How we can reduce the risk of developing dementia is still a subject that hasn't really reached the mainstream. Well, my guest on this edition aims to put that right. Michelle Rachef is CEO at Dementia Prevention UK. Michelle, great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word, CEO of Dementia Prevention UK, which we'll be talking about quite a bit, I'm sure. Before we start, though, I mean, tell us your story. How did you get involved in this whole area of work?
It's really interesting. I think that people that go into the world of dementia or Alzheimer's usually have a story. That's my kind of experience anyway. Unfortunately, both my grandmothers had Alzheimer's. It was only after they passed I realized that there was so much that we could have done for them in order to slow down the progression of the disease. And obviously we started being a little bit worried about the effects of genes, especially on us, because it came from both sides. What the future holds for us. And I just started reading and learning, and the more I read, the more angry I became, because there is so much out there and there is information on how to slow down progression of the disease, and there is information on how to lower your risk of developing dementia, and it's just not in the public domain. It's usually hidden behind quite expensive charges of like £20 or £100 or £200 to pay for a journal to read a paper. And that is when I decided that someone needs to bridge that gap. Someone needs to bring this information to the public and make it understandable and also make it operational. So it is okay to say, you need to eat better, you need to sleep, you need to do this or that. But how do you do that? And understanding the barriers that people experience and the challenges that people experience in actually implementing those suggestions is a different story. And that is our mission. Our mission is to bring evidence-based information to the general public and make it as operational as possible. We work mainly with marginalized, deprived communities, that their barriers are systemic, but also around their language, culture, beliefs. And what we try to do is we try to take this large base of evidence and translate it also to their language, but also to actionable things that they can do. Yeah, so that's a story.
quite a story to start with. And, you know, very much, you know, what's the art of the D word as well, to actually get the message out there. I spent a career in public health before I kind of got involved in all of this. And during that time, I never heard the D word. I never heard the word dementia, whereas it's a massive public health issue. And it's interesting to me that, you know, we look at heart health, we look at all those things, but when someone says brain health, the first question that comes is, what's that?
Very true. Very, very, very true. And what I find in the workshops that we provide is that when people think about their health, they think head down. They don't think about this part at all. It's not part of the body. The very simple exercise that I ask them, what does your health involve? And they always mention, yes, heart health, lungs. You know, they talk about the digestive system, but they never talk about the brain, as if this is something that no one needs to think about. And it is a shame, and it is not in the public domain. You have a headache, okay, so, you know, you think about the headache, but you don't think about your brain. Only when it goes wrong, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And do you think part of it is obviously we've got media concentrating on finding a cure? We all want to find a cure. But those things that you can do now and those things that you may be able to do now, which will prevent something going on in the future, there doesn't seem to be a balance there. All the headlines seem to be cure, cure, cure. Nothing really on prevention or making life better now.
You touched a very sensitive point there. Even if you're looking at funding, so we are a charity and we need funding, especially due to the fact that the communities that we work with are don't have funding. There is quite a large proportion that is directed to people living with dementia, but there is nothing to for prevention. I find myself, people ask me, so in which levels do you think that you need to raise awareness? All levels. It's all levels, even with, people that are designing the eligibility criteria for different funds. Health is something that is important. And when they look at health, they look at this part down. They don't look at brain health, which is, very, very, very frustrating. I do believe that we need to invest in finding a cure. That's 100%. But we also need to make sure that people will not come to a place where they need a cure. And the way that also we view dementia prevention is very holistic. We're looking at education and we're looking at environment. We're looking at employment. We're looking at housing. So under the dementia prevention, there are so many different elements that you can touch, which you can, where you can improve someone's life and their quality of life, and hopefully through that, they will maintain their health. So you really touched a very sensitive
Oh,
issue here.
no, that's what we're here for, really. And you're looking at it through a public health lens, aren't you? I mean, you're looking at it the way people look at heart disease, the way people look at various things. I can always remember that I went to something at the Guardian newspaper and I met a retired cardiologist. And I said to the retired cardiologist, "How do you know when you've done your piece of wizardry and fixed this person up?" They go out the hospital and they're not living in an area which is full of bad air quality. They haven't got a hole in the roof. They haven't got a job. They've got noisy neighbours or whatever. And he said to me, "Quite frankly, I don't." And that kind of summed it up a little bit to me about how we should be looking at all these things and bringing the health in. But it still seems, in terms of public health, dementia is the little kid in the corner that nobody wants to talk to.
Yes, definitely. I think I have a feeling, I'm not sure, that there is quite a lot of stigma around dementia. I think it brings a lot of fear. And that is why people just don't want to talk about it. I think with cancer, a little bit, there is an element of hope because there is some level of cure. And with dementia, it's all kind of like doom and gloom. Although what I am trying, obviously, through the LinkedIn page and through the work that we do, is to share that it's not all doom and gloom, and there are so many things you can do and empower people to do. And when we're looking at dementia prevention or slowing down the progression of the disease, we say, maybe it's not what people want to hear, but if we slow down the progression of the disease enough, a person might pass off because of something else and not because of really low quality of life and losing their capacity. So they might die of other causes. And then we are providing that person another 5, 10 years of relatively good quality of life. And no one is talking about it. No one is focusing on it, which is a huge shame. And I just yesterday delivered a talk, and one of the questions that came up, and usually it comes up when people say, oh, but there's no cure, so what's the point in, going and getting the diagnosis? And again, there is a huge gap here in understanding that there are things that you can do if you receive the diagnosis in a timely manner. And that is a big, I think, misunderstanding and miscommunication Again, I think that is a little bit driven by public health. There is just not enough out there. And even when people go to memory clinics, sorry, I will go on and on about it. Even when they go to memory clinic, the whole idea of lifestyle and modifying their lifestyle is not something that is being addressed at all. They're just getting some antidepressant medication and, things like that. But no one is really sitting with them and asking them about their lifestyle and what are the things that they can do, which is a huge, huge shame. And again, it costs so much more money than I just don't understand the motivation behind not discussing a lifestyle modification.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Always good to hear from you here on the D Word podcast. We're on all the social media platforms as TDW Radio, and you can contact us by dropping an email to tdwradio@gmail.com. On this edition, my guest is Michelle Reshef, CEO of Dementia Prevention UK.
Yeah, I think it's, you and me both, when it comes to understanding that lack of it. And also it's the kind of pathways that I think people perhaps are worried about getting a diagnosis, because there is no clear pathway where you go after that diagnosis. Now, I've had personal experience of that in another sphere, because I had a cancer diagnosis 3.5 years ago, and I got given the really clear pathway of where I was going, and it took a lot of the fear out of it, and touch wood, everything's going fine. But when you get a dementia diagnosis, you just don't have that clear pathway.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. Accidentally, I was part of a study that looked at what people that are affected by dementia, what do they think about the pathway, if there is one. And what this study found out is that there isn't a clear pathway, and that makes people, as you said, more anxious and more frustrated. And more than that, they just don't do the things that they can do in order to slow down the progression of the disease. Yes, it is very frustrating.
It is, but at least there's people like you that are out there. You actually realise where the gaps are and are trying to fill them, which is, a really important thing. I mean, how difficult a sell is it then, in terms of prevention, to younger people, and saying to them, "Well, this could affect you in 30 years' time." That's a difficult one, isn't it? Because a younger person, oh, well, it's not going to affect me for years, so why should I worry about it?
I'll share my experience. I haven't done a study, so that's just my experience. People that approach our charity are people that have been affected by dementia. So it's either their grandparents or their parents, but outside of that kind of circle, it is extremely hard to talk about dementia. People believe that, it happens to other people. It won't happen to me because I am this and that. People don't understand that dementia does not discriminate, doesn't care, and it might show up. And there are things that they can do. So I wasn't able to have anyone in our workshops, and we have more than 1,500 people going through our workshops that wasn't affected by dementia, that didn't see how the disease can affect someone. So I think there is a lot of work that needs to be done around, yes, explaining more about the disease, lowering the stigma, creating this pathway, because I think it is scary. Why should I think about something that there is no obvious pathway to? I wouldn't know where to go. So I think it's all part of the same issue.
I guess part of that is having some form of national strategy or a dementia strategy to put all those bits in place. And that's something in here in the UK we're sadly lacking. A number of other countries do a lot better than we do in that. How do we sell this prevention message to all those people with their fingers on the purse strings and their pens on the policies, in control of things?
I wish I had the answer. If I had the answer, that could have been great. I must agree with you. Usually, when I approach any policy holder around dementia, they are very proud of sending me their dementia strategy. In the dementia strategy, there is never a part about prevention, never. And then when I point it out to them and say, oh, but we have the Aging Well program or the Living Well program, or yeah, but how does that look like? How much money are you spending? What messages are around that? For which each age group is it, supposed to address? And it's just usually it's like, we haven't thought about that. Yeah, you're raising some interesting points there. And then, there's si awkward silence throughout the meeting. And it is a shame. I think that there's just need to be more people like us that are aware. And hopefully this is another thing that I share at our workshops. If this is something, if your health is something that is important to you, then maybe you should point it out to whoever you are voting for. That's the way moving forward. If we are, I believe that we, the people, are supposed to say, hey, this is something that is important. You need to add dementia, you need to add prevention in general across all a lifespan to the agenda. If you're not adding that, if it's not a priority for you, then maybe I shouldn't vote for you because I am affected by, your health, your decisions around health.
Yeah, I don't know. Absolutely, 100% agree. I mean, you're a charity. There are a number of charities, obviously, large number of charities in the health sphere. Do you think we need to combine a little bit better in terms of charities? Because when you think of it, you've got the British Heart Foundation, for example, talking about heart health. You've got people talking about cancer risk, but really, a lot of people are talking about the same things: exercise, healthy diet, don't smoke, etc., etc. But they all go in their own little channels and don't really seem to talk to each other to me.
Wow, you're touching a lot of interesting points today. I assume that people that are watching either or listening can hear my frustration between times. I totally agree with you. I think that when we are, again, that is why when we are looking at a community that we're supposed to work with, we're looking at different elements of prevention within that community, and we're working in partnership with food banks, with the po with the police, with schools, with GP surgeries, with other charities, in that are working for that community. I do believe that working in collaboration, that's the way moving forward. There's no other way. Especially when resources are so limited. And I think that we are, in a way, all talking about the same thing, and we should all work together. It is a shame, that there isn't an open mind,
Yeah,
around
he's.
that area of collaboration.
Yeah, I think, I did not being really meaning to be controversial at all. It's just looking at it fairly, objectively from the outside. And that's just the kind of way it appears. Let's go. I mean, your LinkedIn page, by the way, I was saying is excellent. So everybody wants on LinkedIn. Have a look at Michelle's LinkedIn page. Now, one of the things that drew me to you was the really interesting thing you put on about neurodiversity and dementia diagnosis, and brought up the fact that our current diagnostic tools are a little bit blunt, to say the least, and they're not designed at all for neurodivergent people who may have developed loads of strategies throughout their lives that, in my feeling, I guess just fool the diagnostic process. So, it's another thing that how many people know about this, you know?
Yeah, so I think that there are different groups. So we can talk about women. the mini mental was designed for men, was not designed for women, and women can pass the mini mental, although they might experience some challenges. So this is something that we talk a lot in our workshops on what are the signs and how to collect evidence in order to in a way, persuade your GP that there might be an issue. It doesn't have to be dementia or Alzheimer's or any other type of dementia, but something maybe is wrong and it needs to be investigated. And re regarding a neurodivergency, so there, I think there is just not enough knowledge. What it means, the entire spectrum of each one of those disorders, if you can call it that way. And I think that when we are doing a dementia diagnosis, we are not putting enough emphasis on really interviewing the individual, which is one of the things that I try again to educate through our workshops and say, so there is this challenge that you're experiencing now. Have you always had that challenge? And I give my own example. I don't remember names. It's not that I don't care about people. I just don't remember names. So I say there is no point of me saying, "Ooh, maybe I have dementia because I don't remember names," because this is something that I always struggled with. So you need to be very careful when you go to the GP and with the evidence that you collect and what you present. Because if there are things that you've always struggled with, I always struggled with time. I always struggled with, making deadlines. I always struggled with managing money. I always struggled with whatever you struggled with always. Yes, it might be harder now when you're getting older, but it was something that you always struggled with. What you need to put emphasis on, and this is how you can help the GP or help the specialist that you hopefully will meet, is to be able to really direct the assessment or the diagnosis. With some people, I in some countries, and here I know of one area that does that. They will send people to an assessment to see if they are on the autism spectrum. Maybe they do have ADHD or ADD that might make it kind of create that cognitive overload when we're getting older. So there are countries, and there is only one region in the UK that does that, because they have a charity, by the way. It is not a public health decision of that. It's just a charity that they decided that one of the things that they are doing is they are doing this type of assessment for people that experience cognitive decline, and they don't really know where the cognitive decline comes from, which is really interesting. And I think this is a question that we all need to ask. There is also the element of mental health. So it might be that we're experiencing something, or maybe it is something that we have experienced a long time ago and it's coming back now, and it looks like it might mimic Alzheimer's, but it's not. And I don't think that when people are going through the assessment process, they are being asked enough about their history, and they are not being asked enough to make sure that the evidence. So it is very, very important to bring the right type of evidence to that meeting. So it's kind of like, I think you need to have a booklet that will help you understand how to present your challenges to the specialist.
UK Health Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On future editions of the podcast, we're going to be learning how dementia is perceived in Zimbabwe, the great work that's going on in Wales, and how entertainment therapy is changing dementia care in Florida. All that to come, but on this edition, my guest is Michelle Rachef, CEO of Dementia Prevention UK.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that is a really important point. I know probably about a year ago we had a professor from University in Arizona, Blair Brayton, who's looking at the links between autism and dementia. And it's a really, really interesting subject. And I guess, you know, in terms of the tests, I guess the tests go away, go with most people's thoughts about dementia as a disease. And in fact, it's all memory linked. And that's why, you know, we need more education to say to people, well, hey, there are loads and loads of types of dementia, and it's not all to do with memory loss.
Amazing. Yes, yes. That is another question that I ask. By the way, I'll go back to the autism and ADHD. What I found out that there is a handful of studies, honestly, that's it, that were done about the link between a genetic kind of like overlap between dementia and autism and ADHD. So it is really interesting that there is such high percentage of people that are living with autism or ADHD or both, and still research is lagging behind. One of the questions that I ask at our workshops is, how do you know that the person has dementia? And everyone, ooh, memory, memory, memory. And people don't talk about the behavioral change, which is the very first thing that you should kind of like flag and collect as evidence when you present it to your GP or later on to a memory clinic specialist. So it is that behavioral change that we need to look at. And again, here I ask the same question. Anything happened that caused that behavior change, or it kind of came out of nowhere? So obviously, if we're experiencing any type of loss, then yes, well, it will be only natural that we will express some sort of behavioral change. But if there isn't, then that is the piece of evidence that you need to bring.
Yeah, okay. You brought up another one there, Michelle, because it's always been a thought of mine that this is not all about memory. So why do we send people to something with memory clinic written above the door? Which, you know, again, maybe that's a discussion for another day anyway. But looking at your website from Dementia Prevention UK, you've got three words there, which are our secret ingredient. Tell us about that.
It was just so when we started, it's a little bit of a story. So when we started, it was really hard to get people's engagement. People thought that we were selling snake oil or that we are selling those promises that have no scientific, you know, package. It was just a lot of concern, let's put it that way. And then I thought, maybe we'll just have this joke in our website to say that we have a secret ingredient. And actually, it's not. There is no secret ingredient. There is no snake oil. There is nothing that is controversial about what we do. So maybe it was maybe too clever, because I think that quite a lot of people didn't really understand the joke. But that was the idea. The idea was to say our secret ingredient is actually that there is no secret ingredient. We all have the ability, maybe not the opportunity, but the ability to modify our lifestyle and our ability to lower our risk of developing dementia. So it's not secret, it's out there. So that's the idea.
We've been talking about it, and you've been saying how it's difficult to get the message across. And maybe it is still secret because you're trying to get the message across that hey, it isn't secret. You can do it.
Yes.
So
It is hard. It's still hard. I'm not a marketing wizard. I tried with what made me feel that it will maybe engage people in a nicer way. Again, because there is a lot of stigma, because there is a lot of fear. So adding a little bit of humor, and kind of like twists. We hope that it will allow people to engage with us more easily.
Again, I think you've hit another important point there because a lot of my friends living with dementia, a lot of people living with dementia, I get on the show. Humour's a really big aspect, but because of the stigma, we find it, oh no, it's dementia, can't laugh. But actually, if you ask people living with dementia, then that's what they want to do.
Yes, and humor is well, we all know that people that can laugh are actually have higher levels of intelligence. And in order to create a joke, you really do need to have a full functioning brain. So we do encourage people to use humor, and we people are always kind of like astonished when they come out of our workshops, where they leave the workshop quite uplifted, because we do laugh a lot. And I think that's one of the things that we should do in order to break the stigma, in order to make people feel more comfortable talking about dementia, and to kind of like, yes, it is a horrible disease. Yes, we've experienced that as a family. We can't take it away, but it is important also to try and shed a different type of light. And when people say, "Oh, well, you talk about dementia all day long, aren't you depressed?" And I think, no, I think I bring in something that is, full of hope. Within this disease, we still have some level of control, and it is important to talk. And I think we should talk more about that level of control or empowerment that we can feel even when we are talking about this D word.
Yeah, absolutely. Time is sadly bringing it to a bit of a close, but I mean, what does 2026 look like for Dementia Prevention UK? What are your hopes for the future?
So we have launched our very first program where we are recruiting volunteers to deliver our workshops. So people with a dementia education background to deliver our workshops around the UK. We are finishing this week our first pilot, which, well, I believe was successful. And we are encouraging people from other communities and other places around the UK to join and learn how they can lower the risk of developing dementia for their communities. So we hope to increase our reach in 2026.
Well, hopefully we can assist you in doing that and be really
Amazing.
happy to do so. I mean, it's a great message, as as you can hear, I'm 110% behind it and wish you and everybody there at Dementia Prevention UK every success. And thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. And yeah, good luck. Hopefully, we will carry the light until others will join.
Thanks to Michelle, and I hope the message about dementia prevention continues to gain traction. And you can find out more at the website dementiapreventionuk.com. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more dementia talk right here on the D Word Podcast.